In the introduction of Randy Weston's new autobiography, African Rhythms, the jazz pianist writes, "I come to be a storyteller. I'm not a jazz musician. I'm really a storyteller through music." Weston grew up in Brooklyn and worked with some of the greatest musicians in jazz, but his distinctive style came from a deeply rooted connection to Africa. Just Blues from Randy Weston's latest CD, titled The Storyteller. If you're a jazz musician, where do you find the roots of your music? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. This Saturday, Randy Weston celebrates the 50th anniversary of his landmark recording session, Uhuru Africa, with a concert celebration in New York. Today, he joins us from our bureau in New York City. Randy Weston, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
And conventional musicography traces the birth of jazz to the stew of influences in New Orleans 100 years ago and more. I gather you take it a little further than that.
To the very beginning, the continent of Africa.
And how do you trace it beyond New Orleans to Africa?
Well, because African people were taken from Africa. They were taken to the States, and they came in contact with European culture and instruments and created a different kind of music that they call jazz and they call blues.
You have spent much of your life, in fact, finding the roots of your music in West Africa and indeed bringing the sounds of jazz to that place as well.
Absolutely, because I wanted to find out why I do what I do. I had a great father. He told me you have to study African civilization when Africa was great. He said, because you're only going to hear about Africa after colonialism and after slavery. And my dad also made me take piano lessons. So I was programmed at a very early age, and my mother had to be in a black church every Sunday. So we grew up in Brooklyn, New York. We had all kinds of music, but it goes back to the continent of Africa, where music came from in the first place.
And where in Africa have you found, music that spoke to you?
I've been 18 countries. All the music speaks to me, you know. I search for the traditional music wherever I go. I try to find the oldest musicians I can find. And I hear the foundation of what we do in the Western Hemisphere. It's coming from African civilization.
And it's interesting, you spoke about the influence of your father. There was someone else influential in your search. You were, as you mentioned, from Brooklyn. You served in World War II in the Army, came back from Okinawa, and were around the jazz scene in New York in the late 40s and early 50s. But, there was something else going on in the jazz business at that time that you found very disturbing, and you felt you had to leave.
Well, you know, everything became pop. Everything got away from the blues, you see. And the blues has always been the foundation of our music. It's the kind of music that you can give any message, you know. And so, but I've always wanted to go to Africa anyhow, because I've always wanted to find out where this music comes from, you know, these rhythms and sounds and colors and expressions, you know. So I was very happy to be able to travel, perform in Africa, and hang out with the older people.
And when was your first trip?
1961. I went to Nigeria.
By that time, though, you were well established as, you'd written a lot of hits by that time.
No, not really. I was up and coming, actually. I did some trio recordings for Riverside Records. I did a recording for United Artists, but I was still just coming up because that was a period where many giants like Dizzy Gillespie and Monk and Earl Garner and Art Tatum, All the royalty was around me, so I was just coming up at that time.
You didn't work that much as a sideman, though. You had led your own, small groups, as you're saying, trios and solo acts.
Yes.
Why was that?
Because that's the message I wanted to give, you know. I thought it was so important to know the history of everything that we do and know the history of this music and where the blues came from, you know. And in my research, you know, you hear blues all over Africa. But you're here with the traditional instruments and the traditional languages, you see. And music doesn't have a frontier. So all my life, I want to understand better what happened in the 20s and 30s. Who was Louis Armstrong's great-great-grandmother, great-great-grandfather? Going all the way back to ancient Africa.
You worked a lot also with a jazz historian named Marshall Stearns.
Yes, yes.
And what did he teach you?
Oh, he was very influential. I met Marshall Stearns at the Music Inn in Lenox, Massachusetts, early 1950s. And unlike the other critics, he gave the history of jazz by starting off in West Africa. I was already interested in Africa, and we got to be very close. We did the history of jazz together in several universities and schools. And I believe he was on the State Department board that recommended that I do a tour of 14 African countries in 1967. So Marshall was extremely important. Through him, I met Mahalia Jackson. I met Langston Hughes. I met Babatunde Olatunji. I met Jeffrey Holder from Trinidad. I met two great dancers from the Savoy Ballroom. So Marshall had a global concept of African culture.
And it's interesting, you went on this tour, but obviously you went as much, you were there to perform. Obviously you spent as much time listening as you did performing.
Yes, because I requested wherever possible, I wanted to hear the oldest music I could possibly hear, you know. Mm-hmm. And because you see, the music of Africa, it's music that is totally in tune with the universe and the earth and the sky. The traditional people, their music is very difficult to imitate, because it's the story of their lives. And they have music for every single activity. A baby being born, a funeral. They play games with music. I learned a lot about music by being in Africa and before.
Well, we mentioned earlier you're recording Uhuru Africa, or Freedom Africa, which became one of your signatures. There's a piano version we want to listen to. This is the first movement, Uhuru Kwanzaa, from that album.
Uhuru. Uhuru Kwanzaa.
Fifty years ago. That's quite a while.
I think so, but that's the piano solo version, which is amazing. I haven't heard that in a while. But 50 years ago, we did it with a big orchestra.
Clark Terry, Freddie Hubbard, Slide Hampton, Max Roach, and Melba Liston.
Oh, my God. Langston Hughes and Yusef Lateef and Candido, Amanda Peraza, Ron Carter, George DeVivier, Slide Hampton. I go on. And what was so incredible about that recording, we had to record 9 o'clock in the morning.
you recorded a jazz album at 9 o'clock in the morning?
And nobody was late. 23 musicians.
That's remarkable.
That's how spiritual that was. Because it was a celebration of our ancestors. Mother, father, grandmother. You know, all they had to struggle to give us those piano lessons and keep us spiritually healthy. And it was a salute to Africa. And I didn't realize this year that 17 African countries got their independence in 1960. Mm-hmm. So we're all celebrating this year the 50th anniversary of this suite and also the African nations.
This weekend there's going to be a celebration of that recording, Uhuru Africa. Randy Weston is with us, the pianist and composer. He's got an autobiography out called African Rhythms. His latest CD is called The Storyteller. We want to hear from jazz musicians today. Where do you look to for the roots of your music? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's talk with Nick, and Nick's on the line with us from Redland in California.
Hello, Randy Weston. I'm very floored by to hear all of your history of how you got your inspiration. The reason for my call was the request for someone to call in regarding jazz inspirations and where it comes from. As a late Gen Xer, I've been playing video games for a lot of my childhood. And because of that, there are several video games. One of the first, most popular, was the Super Mario Brothers game. Many individuals you see on YouTube play so many different versions of the Super Mario Brothers theme, whether with a flute or an accordion or beatboxing. And because of that, a lot of my own inspiration has come from the familiarity of video game soundtracks and just performing them in front of young audiences who normally wouldn't go to a jazz concert to see, like, the Pharaoh or Randy Weston, but instead hear something on a similar theme to which people might otherwise hear Summertime of a previous generation. Instead, they're hearing Super Mario Brothers theme or Tetris theme, and you know, it seems to have excitement of its own, and that's where I draw my inspiration from.
What do you play, Nick?
Mostly saxophone, mostly tenor saxophone.
And do you play with a group?
Yes, I do. I actually play with a cumbia group, which is a Latin music and dance band. But because of that, it has its own little side and its own Latin twists to the video game soundtrack.
Randy Weston, I'm not sure you're familiar with the Super Mario Brothers.
No, I'm not.
These soundtracks to the video games are becoming a major source of, Nick, you put it better than I did. This is where a lot of people hear music.
It is where a lot of younger generation kids are hearing music and recognize it from.
Well, thanks very much, and good luck with that, Nick.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Randy Weston, there is such a... jazz is a difficult business. It's never been an easy business, but is it more difficult now than it ever has been?
Yeah, because we don't have access to the media anymore. You see, when we grew up, you know, we had shorts. You could see a short on Duke Ellington or Bessie Smith. It was more accessible to young people. And, you know, and I play for children from 4 months old to 12 years old. If young people have an opportunity to hear this music, they'll understand it because it's their music, really.
It's their music. Some might say, wait a minute, no, my music is R&B or hip-hop.
Well, because that's all they hear, you see. They're not exposed, you see. Well, the music that we call jazz, that's the classical music of America. This music is an incredible music, and you have to go all the way back. You know, I always tell my students, I say, you want to learn how to play piano? You want to know about this music? Go back to the oldest pianist you can find. Go back to Boogie Woogie. Go back to Louis Armstrong. And you hear the foundation of this music. Because this what they created is what we're living off of, in other words. But what they did before us is amazing. But we're not getting that kind of musical education, unfortunately, because this music should be in every school, all the hero. Everybody should know about Louis Armstrong. Everybody should know about Billie Holiday, Duke Ellington, Jimmy Lunsford, because that's the foundation of this music. And that music is timeless. No such thing as old music or new music. I listen to 1927 Duke play the piano. I'm learning every day.
Randy Weston is our guest, the jazz pianist and composer. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller in. This is Via with us from Baton Rouge.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Randy, what a pleasure to have you on the air. And just want to say hello on behalf of all my colleagues at Southern University. We studied under Professor Alvin Batiste.
Ooh,
and
wonderful.
I want to ask you the question, how would you like or how do you like the music of Abdullah Ibrahim from Cape Town?
Well, we did two pianos together during the time of apartheid in South Africa. We did two pianos together and we toured Europe. I know Abdullah quite a while. The first time he performed in New York, I brought my mother and father to hear him.
And well, as a matter of fact, you know, I was intrigued by one of his pieces that says from Cape Town to Congo Square, referring to New Orleans.
What instrument do you play, and where do you get your inspiration?
Well, I play piano and guitar, and I'm a host of the longest-running jazz program in U.S., 33 years in Baton Rouge on NPR. And I listen to music of Randy and McCoy Tyner, Abdullah Ibrahim. So that's the kind of a music I have a lot of spiritual African jazz music. John Blake, violinist, recently has done a work, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, Randy.
Of course.
Well, Via, thanks very much. Good luck with the radio show.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate your call. Tell us a little about how you define yourself as a storyteller. We hear you playing piano. We hear your compositions. How is that a story?
Well, because, you know, Africa has always been a mysterious continent, you know. It's on the map, but nobody knows anything about it. But obviously, our ancestors were brought from Africa here. And they came in contact with bottles and sticks and played music on their bodies, what they call ham bone. So I think it's so important for those who love music to understand what was Mother Africa's contribution to music, you see. And it's the African spirituality, the rhythms and the colors that you find in all of our modern music, whether you call it bossa nova or samba or hip-hop. If you take out the African elements, you don't have anything. So I always try to tell young people, study where things started. How did they start, you see? And so that's my mission in life, really.
Let's see if we get another caller in. Sonia with us from Sacramento.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to say it's a pleasure to hear this legend on the radio.
And do you get your inspiration from Randy Weston?
I have had some inspiration from his music. Yes, my father, as I was explaining, exposed me to cultural music when I was 6 and 7 years old. So I started out listening to Monk and a lot of the Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis. And by the time that I was a teenager, I was able to play any saxophone and in jazz bands competitively.
Thelonious Monk's music, first time you hear it, it can be a little off-putting, a little difficult.
Yes, but the syncopation helps you learn how you get your own rhythm, especially in your own step in life as well.
And Randy Weston, nobody had better angles to his music than Thelonious Monk.
Oh, yeah. I first heard him with Coleman Hawkins, you know, because Coleman Hawkins was my idol. And Coleman Hawkins, he goes way back to Fletcher Henderson, you know. But he always had the young people. First one to record Dizzy, first one to record Miles. First time I heard Monk was with Coleman Hawkins. I heard him play. I said, how did he get that sound out of the piano? And what's he doing? And I had to go and visit him. And I really spent time with him almost 3 years, watching him, going to rehearsals, listening to his music. And it made a lot of sense to me because this music takes you to the universe, you know. And that's my feeling about Mr. Monk, which goes back after Mr. Ellington, because he's been doing that for a long time.
Sonia, thanks very much for the call. Randy Weston, good luck with the concert Saturday night. Randy Weston joined us from our bureau in New York. His latest CD is called The Storyteller. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.